This Twin Peaks Investing Podcast is brought to you in association with SharePad from ShareScoop, the UK's number one investment data and analysis software for private investors and traders. Visit ShareScoop.co.uk and discover the advantage.
Hello and welcome to the Twin Peaks Investing Podcast. My name is Peter Higgins and I'm here with my colleague, Wheelie Dealer, at Wheelie Dealer on Twitter. You can find me at Conquest3 on Twitter. And today's date is the 21st of September. And the time is quarter past six. This is Twin Peaks Investing number 84. We're heading towards that magic 100. Let's see how long it takes us to get there. Right, Pete, the markets have been all over the shop. We've got Liz Truss telling us that we're going to be getting stamp duty cuts. We're going to get tax cut for the bankers and all manner of different things. So the markets is like, whoop, 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 can't make its mind up as to what it wants to do regarding matters. But as we said on the last podcast, we were nearer to the time before last, nearer to 7,500s. We've dipped below 7,200. We finished the FTSE today. Let me just check my numbers, magic numbers. On the FTSE 100, plus 44 points at 7,237. FTSE 250, that's 18,714. That's plus 186 points, a full 1% up. FTSE All Share at 3,973. Plus 26 points, just below the magic 4,000. We want to see the 4,000 on the FTSE All Share because that gives us a good indication as to where the markets are. And 4,000 plus will be seen as positive as a generic sort of number. The AIM just keeps nudging slightly lower, flat today. FTSE AIM All Share at 855, so it can't get above the magic 900 as we speak. We need to see what happens with the Dow and the S&P. We'll have a look at that probably later on with regards to the FOMC coming out with their data any minute now, I suspect. So we'll see that being very volatile. We'll try, if we remember, folks, to touch on that a little bit later on in the market. But I just wanted to thank you all for your feedback regarding Twin Peaks Investing Podcast number 83. Several of you have given us really great feedback. We've had a few nudges as well. Regarding people who want us to talk about various topics. And we've also had, I think, two generous souls who have donated some significant amount of money to the charity. Three. Pete tells me. And Pete's going to talk about those later. Pete's got a topic he wants to talk to you about as well on this podcast. And I've got something I want to share with you guys and ladies and gents as well. But thank you ever so much again for your support. Thank you for those that have retweeted it. Thank you for those that followed us on YouTube and other platforms. If you haven't already done so and you do listen to this podcast, please can you subscribe to the YouTube page because I'm trying to build that up as quickly as I possibly can. If you ever listen to this podcast and there's one thing you find of interest, please do share it with us. Please do retweet it as well on various different platforms, especially on Twitter, which where you can find me and Pete. And we'll try our very best to try and reply to you regarding your feedback that you give us. So thanks again for coming back and hopefully enjoy this podcast, which is number 84. Pete, what have you got?
Well, on the markets, I mean, it's been an interesting couple of weeks. I mean, I think last week was a bit skewed by, I mean, obviously there's a lot of fears around the Fed and inflation and all that kind of stuff. But I think for the UK market, there was also the unfortunate events of the Queen's funeral and stuff. And I think that put the world into a bit of a hiatus. And I think last week we seemed to have a lot of drift downwards. I wouldn't have said there was any like heavy collapses last week, but it was like a sort of just a general malaise, just a drift. And it was the week before we really had the more dramatic falls. And if you remember on the last podcast, I said that I'd close my hedges because I felt we'd had the bulk of it. And it turns out, fingers crossed, that has worked so far, but I get a feeling I may need to put hedges on again at some point. But, you know, as we're speaking today and with the Fed decision tonight. I think we've got the Bank of England decision tomorrow. And I think we've got Liz Truss's, mini budget or whatever you want to call it on Friday. It's funny with all those things going on. When you look at the markets technically, they look like they are in a situation where they could rise from here. Particularly the action today is quite good. So assuming, as long as the Fed doesn't screw anything up, we might be able to see a bit of a rise. But I don't think it means that we'd have a bull market. I think it would just mean we have a bit of a rise and then we carry on in this sideways up and down that we've seen for months. I think that's probably most likely. But what do you think on that?
I've been bearish, Pete. I remain bearish. We're in a bear market. We're going to get some rallies in this bear market. I think each time the UK government and the Fed make certain announcements, if the market likes it, it'll go up a little bit. But invariably, the route is down. I'm not sure how long it will be until we hit that 7,000. I think it's highly more likely that we see 7,000 than we see 7,500. We started what is now nearly 10 months ago, January of this year, and people were, whooping and gnashing their teeth for FTSE hitting 8,000. We're nearer to 7. I think we're going to see 7 before long. I'd like to be positive. I'm still nibbling away at some shares. I bought one today that was nearer to a 52-week low. And others I've been trimming and selling the stocks that were my stocks that have been taken over. I've sold enough to make sure that I get the profits out of those three. Am I positive on the markets for the next 3 to 6 months? No. We've seen some profit warnings, some stocks getting absolutely smashed today again. Mm-hmm. I think that's the way it's going to be. There's a lot of stocks that have been overvalued, Pete, and they're not just tech stocks.
Yeah.
And because of the cyclical nature of the markets, the ones that have been hit by the cost implications, which we touched on this time last year, we touched on at the beginning of this year, we touched on in the summer, and we said, look out for these stocks that have got, impact, could be impacted by costs going forward, could be impacted by inflation. And some of that's coming to roost now. And you only have to say one little line in an RNS now, and the share price is down 10, 15, 25, 30%, 50%. And you're going, whoa, and that was a quality stock. Obviously, if it's an AIM pile of poo stock, then probably you're going to get smashed anyway if it comes out of the warning. But you don't expect that from a company that's, a plus £1 billion market cap stock to get hit by plus 20% move. And that's what's going to be happening once they say they've got troubles or challenges going forward.
You're right. That's been the story all this year, hasn't it? That if you come out with anything slightly bad, you just get pummeled. As you say, this morning when I was reading through the RNSs, it wouldn't surprise me if there was 3, 4, 5 stocks that were down 8%, 15%, 20%, I think I remember seeing. The same old story that IPOs, again, there was another one at least this morning that was an IPO. Is it ITIS or something? ITIS, I think it was. And that's a sort of, retail. They do software for retail. ITIM Group, ITIM, down 20%. And, that only floated recently. And, all this kind of stuff is just getting absolutely marmalized. Anyone who was buying IPOs at the float, and bear in mind, I think most of the time private investors probably don't buy IPOs that much unless they're flipping them. They buy them, then they get out of them quite quick. I think a lot of these are fund managers and stuff. We must be absolutely crucified on these things.
Yeah, I think some private investors do, because depending on the marketing of them and depending on what brokers are, invariably these new stocks are being promoted to new retail. The retailers may not be able to get into the stock beforehand, but depending on the marketing after day one, day two, the first week, they're going, oh, crikey, that's moved quite a lot. Maybe I better jump in on and jump on board of this. And quite a lot of those stocks, you know, I'm not sure about ITIM because I've not looked at it, but a lot of the IPO stocks in the last 18 months were doing so because the shop window was like, oh, you know, we had lockdown and let's get out there and make some money. And like you say, Pete, a lot of them are lower, but equally a lot of the established stocks that have been around 5, 10, 15 years, they're down 40, 50% as well since their peaks. And some of them will go lower. I think the interesting thing for me is what happens now regarding some of the cash that's sitting on the side, because a lot of people are going, I'm out of here. I'm selling this stock. I don't care if it's at a 52-week low. Now's my time. I'm done now. I'm exiting this particular stock. And they've held it. They've averaged down. They've held it. They've averaged down. They've held it. They've averaged down. And then today's news, last week's news, whatever, they've gone, no more. No more.
Yeah, the classic capitulation.
It's going to be cash sitting on the side waiting for a new home.
Yeah. Yeah, that makes some sense. I mean, that is very much the concept of a capitulation, that you can just take no more sort of thing. I would sort of think on a lot of these stocks, if they've fallen that much, you're probably too late to be selling them anyway.
There is, Pete, but this is the old adage of, you know, you've got a stock. And what's the bottom in a stock? It's down 50%. All right, it's at 10p now from 20p. How much more can it fall? Another 100%. Yeah. It can fall to zero.
Yeah,
I mean, it can go to zero. So I always say to people, if you're that concerned about the stock and you haven't got the faith in the stock, you know, if you've got £1,000 in it, you're down to 400. That 400 might be better than zero. Yeah, you can reinvest that 400, or that could be the cost of all you're trading for the year if you want to trade it. If you want to trade that frequently, but you know, if you've not got the conviction in the stock, you know, holding it to zero doesn't make sense to me. Just get out, you know, reinvest it in something else that you've got more faith in, or invest it in a stock you've already got, you know, add to that one with what's remaining of that stock you've no longer got conviction in, you know, don't let it go to zero.
It's that thing that a cheap stock can always get cheaper.
Always.
And we've seen that so much. I mean, I hold Appreciate Group AWP. I'm pretty sure I mentioned it on the podcast a little while ago. That one now looks cheap. It looked cheap 6 months ago. And every time it comes out of results, it jumps up and it just falls back again. And that's all it's done for the last 6 months. And it had a recent update. Again, a good update. It jumped up and it just fell back again. So I think this is the story with a lot of these. I'll tell you what, you know, A1M High, yeah? I think his name's Richard, I'm pretty sure it is. I met him once, really nice guy. On Twitter, yeah?
Yeah.
He said this thing, and it just made me laugh. He said, I can't remember the quote, but he said, there's very few stocks hitting new 52-week highs. There's loads of stocks hitting 52-week lows. But the one that made me laugh, he said, there's a lot of stocks that are resting. And I thought that, to me, that's exactly what App is doing. It's sort of just going sideways in a range, really. And it's sort of having a rest, you know. It's like it can't be bothered to really rise up, and it can't be bothered to particularly fall. But it's just resting, and I just thought that's a great word. It's just brilliant.
It's a lovely term, and I think the beauty of it is, given the market volatility and so many people's first number one holding, the overweight holding they've got, number two, number three holding, that makes up 30-40% of their portfolio, right, and more, right, they would be very happy if those stocks were just resting.
Your
first top 2-3 holdings makes up 40-50% of your portfolio, and they're down 25-40% year to date. You know, you're down 25-30%, Pete. Your whole portfolio smashed already. You do not want that. I would prefer for everyone else's portfolio who's got top three number holdings for them to be resting and not be to be down 20-30%. You know, because it means for me, and this is the whole purpose of this podcast. I'm trying to put this podcast together with Pete, and I've been pushing all the other podcasts that I'm doing. It's to educate people so they stay in the market longer. Lots of people are leaving the market. Some of them will not come back, Pete. Because I've been listening to people ramping stocks, pushing stocks. And yesterday, today, last week, so on and so forth, they've got smashed on two or three stocks and they've gone, this ain't for me. You know, oh, I'm just going to buy ETFs, or I'm just going to give the money over to fund managers to look after, you know, or they've just exited the market and will not come back because they've lost so much money. You know, and I say to people, it's better to learn slowly how to do research, how to invest in the market, than to copy anybody. You know, I say this every podcast, don't copy anybody, don't follow anybody, don't listen to anybody. Find out what it is that you need to know about that stock before you put a penny in that particular company. But, oh, I've not got time. Or that person's a genius. Or that person knows what they're talking about. No, they don't. They don't. Yeah.
And they,
which is why their stocks are getting hit. But they've got fund managers. You know, there's something put out today about the top holdings of the Buffettology fund that Keith Ashworth Lord has got. The top three of those are down across the board about on average about 30% on average, three of them. And you're going, whoa. Yeah?
I mean, that's an interesting point, that even some of the highly thought fund managers are finding it difficult. And that's, it's not a surprise when you look, I mean, we were talking about the markets earlier. The FTSE 100 is an anomaly, really, because the FTSE 100 has actually held up pretty well. And it's really because of the big banks doing well with rising interest rates. It's because of BAE Systems, defense company, doing well. It's because of the oil companies, you know, the big oil majors doing well. It's because of AstraZeneca doing well. And it sort of artificially held the FTSE 100 up. And yet, if you look at the FTSE 250, you look at the FTSE small cap, you look at FTSE, if you look at AIM, those indexes have been absolutely smashed. I mean, I think they must all be down a minimum of 20%. I would imagine AIM one is probably down 30, 40. If you're...
I don't know about 30, 40, but they're down significantly. I would say the banks are less helpful regarding the FTSE 100 at the moment. Mm. But definitely the oilers and the energy stocks have definitely helped. The miners less so as well, and AstraZeneca. But I think the thing for me, and you spot on it being an anomaly, because actually, at the moment, across the board, if you look at all the stock markets, the FTSE 100, if we're looking at as our benchmark, which we shouldn't really, is actually holding up far better than most other indices at the moment.
Around the world.
What you're saying, yeah. Which is what you're saying, which is bizarre. You know, and I think the concerning thing for me is, Pete, is that if we get something happening to the likes of AstraZeneca or to the oilers, then boy, oh boy, are we in a world of hurt. We need them to stay where they are and rest. and not fall too heavily, you know.
Do you know what? That's,
because the markets will get
that. You've hit on another sort of link to what I said earlier about the resting. In a way, the FTSE 100's been resting, whereas all the others have taken a lot of action,
bouncing around like bunny rabbits. And
the FTSE 100's really just been wiggling around between what, 7,000, 7,500, or whatever. Been wiggling around there all year. It's.
I think an interesting point as well, a sector, and I've been answering questions about this on and off for the past, feels like forever. People saying to me, is now the time to buy builders? Why are builders so low? I want to buy these builders. I'm going, guys, ladies, please, right? We're going through an environment now, cyclical changes going on. Interest rates are going up. Borrowing's getting more difficult. People's jobs are unsure about their employment status going forward. You know, the house prices have been going up and now they're stabilizing. You know, is now a time to buy a house? Can people afford to buy a house? How much does it cost to buy a house? You know, you've got to put 10% down if you're lucky, right? So the average house, I don't know what, let's just pull a figure out of the air and say average house is 200 grand around the whole country, maybe a bit higher than that.
I think it's about
10% down. So 10% of that is 20 grand or 25 grand. Then you've got the expenses of moving. Yeah, on top of that. Then you've got your first month's mortgage. You know, so all of a sudden you've got 40 grand before you've gone, you know, you've got the keys and you've gone, there's 40 grand gone. How many young people have got 40 grand to hand and out regarding buying the first house? You know, so that's the problem you've got. So today, I got the calls, Pete. Oh, Pete, I'm buying house builders. Why? Oh, I've heard that they're cutting the stamp duty. And all the house builders are going up. Right. Okay. And maybe this is the right time because a lot of them are at 52-week lows, Pete. So you've got Persimmon up today, or was up when I last looked. Barrett Homes up today. Taylor Wimpey up today. Berkeley up today, Redrow up today, Bellway up today. Yeah, all of them up today because stamp duty is going to get cut. But I'm like, is stamp duty really what it's all about regarding the builders? Of course it helps,
yeah.
You know, reducing the cost of making your first purchase or buying a second home or just moving. But I don't know. I think these rises today in the house builders could just be a short term thing. They will bottom at some point, and you know, a year from now, 3 years from now, 5 years from now, the prices that these individuals have bought these house builders at today will be or could be, you know, bargains, and they'll be up 50-30% higher in 3 or 4 years, 5 years time. But equally, it could be lower in 3 weeks, four weeks time, depending on what happens next regarding the stock market. But I think for those that are buying long term and are able to go, I'm not buying any more of these house builders. I'm going to buy at this price, I'm going to ignore it now, and I'm going to take the yield. I'm going to wait 4 or 5 years time. I think they'll do extremely well. Is the bottom in for house builders? I would say no.
Who knows? Who knows? I mean, interesting, today's move up partly looks just a reaction to yesterday's big fall. There was no real obvious reason for the fall yesterday on the house builders. They were particularly hit. I mean, they were getting hit 6-7% yesterday on no news. You know, that was a strange move on a day that was weak but wasn't particularly bad. I just assumed there was a broker downgrade or something, but I didn't see anything.
No, the essence of it is that they know from all that's been muted that interest rates are going to go up again.
But they've known that for months, haven't they? It's not exactly new.
Yeah, for months. But this month, we're going to get another interest rate rise. And, you know, we were closed on Monday. Yeah. Tuesday. What can you see? Hearing all this news over the weekend saying interest is going to be going up. The Bank of, you know, FOMC is going to raise interest rates.
Yeah.
You know, the UK Bank of England is going to raise interest rates. Like, oh, let me just get rid of some builders then and buy something else. And then today it's like, oh, we're going to cut stamp duty. Oh, let me go and buy it back. You know, yeah. And some people are doing that, you know, the scalping stuff for 1% and 2%. I'm like, okay, that's what you want to do. That's what you want to do. You know, so yeah. So those that bought builders today, I wish you luck. If you're going to invest in it for 3 to 5 years, you'll be absolutely sound. You'll be absolutely fine.
You know, I think the house builders is a very unusual market because for all the reasons you've just said, there's good reasons to be bearish on it. There is a flip side to that. And I think that's really that I think the market has been basically screwed up, you know, because there are so many problems with supply and there are clearly not enough houses. And I can see a situation where the government, by hook or by crook, keeps house prices up. Because bear in mind, the Liz Truss government wants to get re-elected in 2 years' time. They're going to be doing every trick they can to try and get the economy back on track to some degree, yeah? And they know that if house prices fall, there's going to be even less people voting Tory because it's always been a big thing, you know, Tories always felt that, you know, get more people as house owners, they'll vote Tory. That's always been the logic. And
has it always been that simple, Pete? Oh my gosh.
Yeah, well, mate, that is the simplicity of how political people think. But yeah, so
it's about getting the bankers to get a better bonus than what is it before. Oh, yeah.
Well, mate, if they give the bankers better bonuses, they'll have money to buy houses with that they can rent out. Yeah, so, you know, I'm not convinced the house prices are going to drop in a heavy way. I certainly think they're going to stop growing like they were because I think the growth in recent years has been mad. But I'm not convinced they're going to fall because the other problem you've got is there aren't many transactions going on. You know, the number of transactions has reduced considerably. So as a result, if you're a buyer of a property, there's no choice. If you're a seller of a property, there's no one to compete with because no one else is selling. It's like the whole the whole sort of market is gummed up and it just doesn't work anymore. So I think there's a big issue around that.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I think the last thing I read was that year to year, August 21 to August 22, I think the market was just about up, and regarding transactions, whether or not I'm sure I can't think where I read that, but I'm sure that's what I saw. But yeah, you're right that we're getting to the point now, and we're going into the winter months where there's less sales going to be going on anyway. Will the stamp duty cut, if it happens in a mini budget, help the transaction bit? And we see a spike in that. It's a possibility, Pete. And if we see a spike in continued transaction prices and also number of transactions, then these people that are buying today, these builders, could do quite well. Because the other aspect about it is, Pete, we talk about it a lot, is the fact that the dividends on a lot of these builders is quite high. You're going to be getting a better yield on some of these, and the landlords are going to get for trying to get tenants in, you know, without the hassle. So, you know, there's that possibility as well. But it's definitely going to be very interesting times going forward. And I think the interesting thing, I was on a conversation with this economist last week, and he's not a Brexiteer, he's not anti-Tory, and he went, Pete, Liz Truss will be getting kicked out or battered by the press by spring. This honeymoon Goldilocks period with her is going to be over by the spring. And I was like, why do you say that? He said, because essentially the policies that she's putting in place are going to cripple the country long term. Short term, they might help, but long term, it's going to be absolutely staggering. And when she goes to try and do deals here, there and everywhere with other people, they're going to just laugh at her. And I was like, wow. You know, and I don't mean that laugh at her because she's a female. I mean, as a leader trying to do what she's doing, you know, Boris was saying, I'm going to get this deal done in America straight away. It's going to be sorted. It's going to be the easiest deal ever. Didn't happen.
Well, that's all gone, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah. And then Liz Truss is going to try and do the same thing X amount of years later with now Biden. We'll see what happens. But I think the interesting thing for me and the scary thing for me is, as a leader, she now has the power to actually put in place so many things without being forced to do so, right? And I think the interesting thing will be, she's saying, I'm ready to make some really tough decisions. So if she does do that and she does make some unpopular choices, which will be for the betterment of the country longer term, it will be a good thing. But she's been left a pile of poop, Pete. She's got a massive, massive task ahead of her, you know, and we just need to get on side and see what happens going forward and what she does. The markets will dictate whether or not they like or dislike some of her policies, and will tell us where we are. You asked me at the beginning of this podcast where I think the market's going to be. I think we're going to see 7,000, sub 7,000, possibly even before December. I want to be wrong.
Do you think it will go below that? Was it? I think it's about 6.8, I think, is the sort of recent low on the foot. Do you think it will go below that?
I don't know. Yeah. I think if we don't see lots of positivity coming out into this market soon, and the interest rate rise in the US and here impacts us, and we see lots more profit warnings from behemoth companies because of input costs and other associated inflationary costs, then we could see the market just go, you know what I mean? The only thing keeping up the FTSE right now, as you said, pharma, oil and energy stocks. We need the others to participate. We need the others to help. If it was a football team, you can't rely on just scoring more goals than the opposite team and the other defence being absolutely shocking and letting in loads of goals. And you're thinking, they scored six, we've got to score seven. You've got to have the spine going through the whole of the economy. So all the companies, left, right and centre, benefit, not just the oilers and the farmers, Pete.
There was some more important economic news today. And that, of course, was the package that the Truss government is announced for businesses to help businesses, and that's going to go on for 6 months. It looks like it will, the theory is, as a rough guide, it will reduce business costs by about half from where they would have been for their energy costs. But bear in mind, it's half from where they would have been if they hadn't introduced this. It's still massively up on where it would have been 6 months or a year ago. So it's positive for the economy in the sense that a few more businesses might survive, But it's not great because obviously it adds to the debt mountain that the government has got, and that's a huge problem. Interesting, the latest government borrowing figures for the last month that came out, which I think was August, are the highest ever. I mean, they're just horrendous. Just horrendous figures.
It's horrendous, Pete. But the most important aspect of this, and I've touched on this in the past, is that the largest number of employees, right, are employed by SMEs. Not AstraZeneca, not BP.
Yeah.
The largest number of employees are SMEs. You've got to ensure that as many of those survive as possible. The little one-man banders, the little cafe, the independent pub, you know what I mean? The coffee shop, the restaurant, the hoteliers. You've got to make sure that all these people survive. You know, otherwise, if they go, they take three or four employees with them, times thousands, times half a million. You need to ensure that as many of them actually get through. This is what's going to be an absolutely shocking winter regarding energy prices. So if they can get through rather than shutting shop, great. You know what I mean? And that's what we need to do. And if that's what Liz Truss does as a first win, great. Because otherwise you get to the Christmas and that company's gone. January, you get the unemployment figures and it's like, whoa. You know, all these companies on the news saying, I've just shut up shop. We don't need that.
The other big problem, of course, is it feeds inflation. You know, the fact that the energy bills, okay, are going to be less, but they're considerably more than they would have been a year ago, feeds inflation. Right. And I think we were talking earlier about, you know, what will turn the markets. I think the only things that are going to help are inflation coming down. It's probably that one singular thing. Once we see inflation noticeably go off the peak and start coming down, I think we need to see company announcements reflecting that. So we need to see company announcements saying, you know, the inflation problem has eased and we're now on top of it and that kind of thing. And I just feel we're quite away from that. I mean, it's incredible, right? We've had so much news since we recorded podcast TPI 83, because, you know, we've had the awful news about the Queen. The latest one we've had today is the Putin up in the ante on the Ukraine war, talking about 300,000 troops to be mobilized, rattling the nuclear arsenal again. And he's talking about referendums in the four occupied territories, you know, and I think we need the Ukraine war to be resolved to have as another factor that could help economies.
I agree with you. We want it resolved. I hope we don't get it resolved by somebody pressing the wrong red button. We saw the news today and there's lots of different tweets going on about it. Two interesting points is that almost immediately that was said about we're going to recruit 300, get these people, reserves as well, on board. There's been a flood of people fleeing the country, apparently.
Now there's
a ban on people of a certain age, I think 18 to 65, being allowed to leave the country as well. But you know me on this podcast, I don't like to talk about the Russia word and stuff too much. Just keep them away from our podcast, mate, as best we can.
This is a quick hello to you, our valued Twin Peaks Investing podcast listener. Whatever channel you're listening to, please make sure to subscribe and you'll always be the first to get the new episodes. Thank you for your continued support.
Let me just change the subject completely. Right. Dave Mutton, right, was talking on Twitter and he talked about this thing called the lipstick index. And I know you use a lot of lipstick, Pete, or chapstick, should I say.
All the time.
But it's meant to be an indicator and things are looking positive, almost like a bullish sort of indicator, Pete, at the moment. The sales of cosmetics have gone up. Yeah. So all that, you know, beautifying stuff that you use on your top of your bonds, your head, and on your rosy cheeks. Yeah. And lipstick is actually going up. And the question was, is this a positive indicator for the markets because this is going up? And then we had some news from the old famous one we've got in London, War Paint London. Yeah, you've seen that?
some people talked about it.
W7L. And they came out with and delivered a record half-year sales peak. And more importantly, their selling and revenue growth is accelerating in the UK and the US. And if it can accelerate in the UK, which is a massive market, then that's really, really good. And they're in discussion with lots of retail companies, apparently. So that's one which, you know, I would say to people, keep an eye on that stock. It's quite richly priced, I think, already. But equally, as with all things, you touched on, they can go, a low price can go even lower. A high price and a high PE stock can go also higher. So if you have a look at the range of price on that, Pete, that's certainly a stock to have a look at if they're catching the eye of everybody else. First half sales, total sales up 37%. It's not bad when you think about it. And online sales equally impacting and helping gross margins, which increased 39%. So that to me is one of the stocks I wanted. Pete, I don't hold it. I don't intend to buy it. It's not a stock that I would buy. I don't think my wife would like me buying stocks to do with cosmetics somehow. She might think, what's he up to? You know, he's trying to get my Christmas present on the cheap or something. I don't know. But yeah, it's one to definitely keep an eye on, one to definitely research. And if it's doing well, you know, equally, we're heading towards Christmas. People are going to be buying cosmetics again because they're going to be going out, hopefully, if we're not in lockdown. People are going out and socializing. And because people are returning to the office, people are socializing more. People are meeting up and seeing their friends and so on and so forth. We've had all these people going out to various events. More makeup is needed, apparently. You know, so yeah, so there you go. Might be one to watch, one to look for. Research idea, that's all. Want to give research ideas.
A few thoughts on that. I mean, quick, I looked on SharePad and it's saying forecast PE 14.4, and then in 2 years, 14.9. So the PE is predicted to rise, which implies that earnings per share is falling. So there's something strange there. That's so people need to, you know, people need to look in and try and figure out why the forecast would say it's the earnings are going to fall. That doesn't really make sense. Forecast yield, the dividend, 4.9% rising to 5.1, which is pretty good, really. And I noticed the balance sheet is good, you know, but one day you were saying that, you know, Dave Mutton, good guy, he's on Twitter. Dave Mutton had mentioned like a sort of general sort of theme, if you like, or trend that in tough times, lipstick and that does well. I've heard that myself, you know, so that makes sense. But I can't help thinking with W7L, it's actually stock specific. I think they've done a really good job of getting in. I think they've got into Tesco's. I've got a feeling they're in Superdrug. I think they're trying to get into Boots. And I think they've done a really good job of that. And I think there's a lot is self-help measures, you know. I don't know if it's a wider thing that people are buying more lipstick. Maybe they are. I'm not sure about that.
But you haven't answered my question, Pete. Are you buying more lipstick?
Am I buying more lipstick? I buy chapstick because it's for chaps. Chapesses buy chapesses stick. It's quite simple.
Yeah.
You've never seen chapesses stick because you go to the wrong shops.
Right, come on. Give us some stocks that you've got. Or do you want to have a break now and tell us about the charity bit?
What I'm going to talk about backup a second, mate.
Go for it.
You know, existing, established, well, tuned in listeners will know we always have a charity that we give our support to and encourage our listeners to help contribute to. And this year we've got the Backup Trust, which is a spinal injury charity. I'm spinally injured myself. I'm a T3 paraplegic wheelchair user. I know Backup from old, and they're good guys. Just to give you an idea, on the Just Giving page that we've got, I'll give you the address in a minute. God, I can't see it. I've got to take my glasses off again. I'm getting so blind, it's ridiculous. Right, yeah. It talks about the things they do, you know, as a charity. So they do wheelchair skills training. That's something I've mentioned before. I actually did that myself. School support for children with spinal cord injury. So kids with spinal cord injuries are actually supported in school. So that's a really good thing. Mentoring for people with spinal cord injury and their families. So that's a good one. Yeah. Again, particularly for children, that would be really, really helpful. Supporting people back into the workplace. That again, yeah. Very, very valuable stuff. I mean, I remember when I went back into the workplace, because I used to work at Fujitsu, after I had a motorbike accident in 1998, when I went back to work, there wasn't really much help back then. Maybe backup would have helped if I'd have asked for it, but I was lucky because my boss and the HR department in Fujitsu and that were really good. And you could get things like access to work program, which is like a government scheme, which really doesn't sort of help you in the sense of advice and guidance. It just gives you a bit of money, which is always sort of, you know, something you're not going to turn down. I think they helped me buy a wheelchair. I'm pretty sure they did. And then they got life skills and activity courses. So that's the Outward Bound course that I've mentioned before. And they've also got telephone support. So that's a good little summary of the things they do. If you want to contribute, go to justgiving.com/fundraising/TwinPeaks. I hate the word slash. I don't know why. Let's not go there. On my
think of the guitarist, Pete. Think of the guitarist.
That's exactly what I was thinking. That's exactly what it was. Yes. What a strange name. Why would you call yourself Slash? I mean,
Guns and Roses, mate. I mean, Guns and Roses.
Guns and Roses. I mean, yeah. But again, why would you call yourself Axl Rose? Anyway, where was I?
Move on. You're going to lose where you're at. Come on.
Yeah. Wheelie Dealer 2 website. If you go to the podcast bit, it's got a link for the Just Giving page at the top. Where's it on yours, Pete?
It's on every single new listing of the podcast, the first write-up, which I put all the feedback on. On that page, there's lots of links to the Just Giving page to support the Backup Trust.
Fantastic. Every now and again, when I remember, I stick out a tweet with the link on so that people can find it easy. Mm-hmm. Right. Got a few guys have given us donations. So start off with Northy. Lovely, lovely donation. 100 quid plus a 25 quid gift aid. Long-time listener. What's that?
Just saying thank you.
Yeah, big time. Thanks, Norby. Brilliant. Long-time listener. Love the unscripted rambling down the pub vibe. Well, you're definitely getting that this week, mate. if only Pete would be less coy about his research techniques. Promise to donate 10 quid for every whatever uttered by Wheelie in B84, whatever.
Oh dear.
Brilliant. sorry, I can't stop laughing. Right. Richard S. I think we know who Richard this is, so thanks, Richard. Nice 50 quid donation and 12.50 gift aid. Great work. Thanks for the podcast. It's a pleasure, mate.
Thanks, Richard S.
Michael VW. I'm not sure if that means he drives a VW. Maybe he does. Wise man. Mm. Wise man, definitely.
Yeah.
I sort of drive a VW, but mine's a VW underneath. Right. Love your podcast. I'm new to investing and your down-to-earth conversations are very helpful and great fun. Keep up the great work. Cheers, mate. That's brilliant. Right. Oh, my God, there's some more appeared. What? I can't keep up. Right, I'll do them next week or whatever, next time.
Okay. What's the total right now? Because I thought we'd gone over the 2,000, which is what you did nudge over.
Yep, we're up to £2,199.53 people have donated. So thanks, everyone.
Brilliant. Fantastic. Thank you all for your donations. Really, really appreciate it. Those that haven't donated yet, if you can support Wheelie regarding this particular push for the Backup Trust, it'll be absolutely fantastic. You know, whether it be a pound or a fiver or £100, he'll be brilliant. They really are in need for some financial support, as you would have seen regarding what's going up and down the country. Charities are really struggling at the moment because a lot of the companies that would support them are actually financially struggling themselves. So if you can support them, and going back to what I was saying before, and I usually say this at the end, if you can and you've got some time, do what you can in the communities. They really need a lot of volunteers and supporters right now. Okay, Pete, do you want me to talk about another stock?
Well, could we just throw in another quick topic? I'm sure we can squeeze
it. Go for it.
Mate, what it was, well, I tell you, I've got a couple of quick things. First one, a really quick one. You do these Investing Matters podcasts as another thing. You
going to talk about that a bit later, but yeah, go on.
Oh, well, you dabble it. I noticed this week you had a lady on there. Who was she, and what does she do, and what's it all about?
Okay, so the lady that I interviewed, I won't say last because these go out every 2 weeks, is called Sharon Bentley Hemlin, and she is the founder, director, and fund manager at Aubrey Capital, based in Edinburgh in Scotland. And she's probably one of the highest performing fund managers in the country.
Wow.
And she's been doing this for up to and around 30 years. And she's not one of those that is on the radar. She doesn't do a lot of promotional stuff. She doesn't do a lot of interviews, but she's one of the leading lights out there. And the reason why I interviewed her is because I want to interview the best people that are out there. And I don't want to interview the same people all the time. And I want to interview some of the female specialists and fund managers and economists that are out there. Because unfortunately, a lot of the people that are interviewing various people out there at the moment interview mainly men. And yeah. I've said this before and I'll say it again, people. Some of the best investors and some of the best fund managers and invariably the best investors over the long term are female investors and female fund managers. If you want to make a better return on your money, don't just be looking at these, you know, men that are out there that are being promoted left, right and center and always the go to that person that, or go to that fund. It's not always the case. You've got to look beyond what the market is promoting. You know, we've had lessons from Woodford. You know, I loved Neil Woodford for what he did prior to his fund going. I rated him. I thought he was one of the best guys in the world for fund managing, you know, up there with Bolton and up there with Gervais Williams, which is the other person I've recently interviewed. But some of the best fund managers out there, the best economists to listen to are women. Read, research, have a look, and don't just go to the people that have been promoted all the time on social media and across the TV and all the rest of it. The Investing Matters podcast is about educating people on how to invest long term. I think 22 of them have been published at the moment, if not 23. The next one's going out next Wednesday. If you haven't listened to any of them yet, just go onto my Twitter profile. You'll find them on there. Go on to @INVMMattPodcast, as in Invest Podcast, or just type in Investing Matters on Twitter and you'll find them all there. Loads of material for investing across the board, fund managers, economists, analysts, PR, IR people. And I'll be putting out a new one every 2 weeks, so you can find them on my timeline. I think the beauty about these podcasts is that they're going to be timeless for education, a bit like these, what I do with Pete. You know, 50% of all this content we put out is you can go back and listen to it in X amount of years' time and it'll be educational. I've got a few interesting people coming down the pipeline as well. For those of you that like your football, I'm going to be speaking to a footballer, or a podcast will be going out regarding a footballer who's working in the investment industry, a former England international as well. So quite an interesting chap who does quite a lot of stuff. But for me, I think the hardest thing to do is get these people to give up their time. You know, they're working with assets under management of £1 billion, £2 billion, £3 billion. And I'm going, "Hi, my name's Pete. Could you give me an hour of your time, please? I'd love to interview you." And they're going, "What?
Who are you?"
Busy, busy people, mate. So, you know, for me to get these people is absolutely phenomenal. And for you guys to get it for free and to be able to listen to it at your leisure, it's a must. It's a must.
Oh,
you know, everything costs money, and these interviews are out there for you to listen to. And if you do find them, you do like them, just give me a little nudge as to what your thoughts were of them, and follow the Investing Matters handle on Twitter, and follow them for free, and subscribe to the YouTube channel as well, and have a listen to it. They're amazing interviews.
I mean, that sounds great. So what kind of fund does this lady run then? Is it like a unit trust,
The funds cover Europe, Asia, ESG credentials as well, Pete, the whole nine yards.
So
I think the interesting thing for me, Pete, and I'm not going to go into details of the funds, is for people to go and listen to the podcast and investigate the funds that she does. Yeah.
Are they things that our listeners could invest in?
Yes.
Brilliant.
Dependent on their exposure and size of their wealth. Yes. Yeah. And there's others besides that they could invest in.
Yeah. Okay. That makes sense. Okay. What I'll do, mate, I'm going to talk about some stocks.
Yeah.
I had another question, but I'm going to skip that question. I'm going to save that till next podcast.
Okie dokie. Okie dokie.
Because that's educational type one that isn't going to time out. Talking about stocks, right? Do you know what? We were talking about the house building sector just now, and we were talking about lipstick and how that as a sector could do well. And we've talked about oil as a sector today, and we've talked about banks as a sector and probably some other stuff. One sector that might be doing okay is gaming. And the reason I say that is that I've got a stock that I don't really know anything about, yeah? But it IPO'd fairly recently, I think about 6 months ago. But it's very similar to Team 17 that I hold. It's similar to that, I think. I think that's a good comparison. Now, what makes me think the sector's perhaps doing okay is that Keyword Systems, KWS, came out with results today, and they were pretty good. And Frontier Development, FDev, came out with results that, again, read pretty well.
A former Fintuit favourite, Frontier, wasn't it?
Yeah, and I sort of wonder if, you know, hard times, cash-strapped consumers, perhaps people aren't going to be going out as much, but they will be staying at home. They need entertainment. And they are so addicted to their video games. You know, when the latest version of Tomb Raider or whatever, or Call of Duty, they got to have it. You know, they got to have it. And I wonder if that's part of it. And you look at companies like, well, the company I'm going to mention, for people to look at, is Devolver. D-E-V-O. Okay. Do you know it, Pete?
Nope, no it at all, Pete. Never looked at it. Go on.
You know what? I remember it floating, but then I think in all the sort of crappy markets we've had, I sort of forgot about it, you know. And because I hold TM17, I thought, well, they seem very similar, so why would I bother holding both of them? But I think it looks in a really interesting little company, and it's the classic. It's done the IPO, it's tanked, and it sort of looks like it might be going sideways a bit. So it might be a bit early to buy it, or it might be a good time to dip a finger in and sort of get a holding position. But I thought it was just interesting that the sector might be doing better than we think. And also, all these gaming companies were on bonkers PE ratios before. I mean,
yes, they were.
TM17 was on like 45 all the time, and it did very well at those high ratings. But they've all re-rated. I got a feeling TM17's under 20 now, and I think Devo is under 20. So you know, just something. What do you reckon, mate?
Well, if they're coming down, Pete, if they're coming down in value and in PE, but their revenues are increasing, then that they're going to meet in the middle somewhere. And I think the good thing about what you've said there is that, you know, invariably people's pockets are being squeezed. And if they're staying home, you know, and getting the tinnies in and then getting the beers in and their spirits in and actually just playing games, then why not? There'll be more revenues going forward. I think what we've seen over the past few years as well is that some of these that are actually doing better than the market's saying, or giving them, qualifying them with a share price and appreciation, somebody else invariably comes and gets them, Pete, you know, takes them over.
Yeah.
You know, so if it's cheap on the metrics in comparison to their peers that are getting taken over, that's what I would have a look at. What's the price per book that the others are getting taken over at in comparison to this particular company, or in comparison to what's being priced for Frontier Developments right now? I think what I would say regarding these companies, Pete, is to have a look at how much revenue they're actually generating. You know, that's quite important because some of these are quite small, and it's about getting the traction. And, you know, as you said earlier in this podcast, a lot of these IPOs over the past year and a bit have been smashed. Is this another one on that's already declining but could go lower despite it being in a sweet spot or a sweet sector? I don't know. I've not looked at it enough. I've not looked at it at all. So I think it's one of them that I would have to go away and have a really, really good look at. But if it's a sector that could grow when this downturn, it's going to be one of them. It's, you know, it's going to be one of those. It's not going to be for the likes of some of the other sectors, which are absolutely getting absolutely creamed going forward because of inflation stuff. Yeah, it's not a manufacturing one. You know, they're actually developing stuff.
Yeah, that's interesting. Well, I wonder, when you think about a gaming company, when you think about what its costs are and therefore what is going to have inflation, it's obviously going to have inflation on the developer cost, you know, the employment cost of the developers.
Yeah.
It's going to have energy costs on electricity and stuff like that. But when you think about it, you know, its distribution cost is minimal because it's all done online now. You just download it. And it's one of those things where to make your first nail is incredibly expensive because you have to build a nail factory. To make your second nail, your third nail, your fourth nail gets marginally cheaper each time. And I think we've got exactly that with the gaming industry. It's like the more units you sell, the lower the cost per unit.
Yeah.
So it's just interesting dynamic
as well. I think the thing as well to bear in mind with these gaming companies is that sometimes their revenue stream, their royalty stream, can be quite lumpy and inconsistent. So if they've got a revenue stream and games planned out and they go, you know, we're going to release this in January 2023 and they hit that mark and they hit it and they and sales go well, you know, I'm just using that date. I'm not saying that's a date for that company. And they're consistently releasing these new games, then great. The revenue stream's there and then they're collecting the royalties from it and all the rest of it. So a real, you know, it's a sweet spot, Pete. And we're going towards winter as well. The students are back in the universities as well. They love their gaming, you know, so that's another possibility regarding everything else.
Just to finish on what you said there, I think you're right. I think there's certain gaming companies that are lumpy because they have new releases and they have like one or two blockbuster products. I think there's then other ones, and I would say KWS comes into this category, Keyword Systems, where it's more about doing work on loads of different titles, game titles. TM17 is in this category, and I think Devo is very similar, where they've actually got loads and loads and loads of titles, and they've got loads and loads of back catalog. And I think that sort of smooths the revenue profile and smooths the profitability. So worth bearing in mind that difference. I think FDev is more lumpy, I think.
Okay. So Pete, what's the market cap of this company then?
I just had a quick look. It's something like 360 million. So it's not a lot.
Well, it's still a reasonable size. That's not a bad size for a gaming company, mate. The UK one, anyway.
It could be nibbled, you know. It could be easily nibbled. So, anyway, it's just one to look at. What are you thinking of, mate?
Whether you are an experienced or new investor, you know how valuable it is to conduct portfolio enhancing analysis and to have easy access to data that will give you the edge. As a Twin Peaks Investing podcast listener, you can access an exceptional offer via ShareePad from ShareScope, the UK's number one investment data and analysis software for private investors and traders. This special Twin Peaks offer is available to new subscribers only, and you can subscribe using the promo code TWINPEETS. The incredible and exclusive offer means that monthly subscribers will get their second month free, and annual subscribers will get their 13th month free. Sign up and subscribe to ShareePad today using the TWINPEETS promo code, and you can save up to £69. Visit sharescope.co.uk/sharepad for further details and subscribe to the investing and trading analysis and data you need.
I'm thinking of we talked about fund managers earlier and you talked about the Investing Matters podcast. Mm. And a very interesting thing happened last week around, I think it was exactly this day. I'm losing track of the days, but last week the news came out about Fundsmith Emerging Equities Trust talking about calling it a day.
Feet is
the ticker for that. And it, essentially, you've got a situation where they're doing all right, you know, but the NAV was quite wider than they would want it to be. And the board and the management company essentially decided that they want to, and Terry Smith, decided that, you know, it's not maintained the level that it would want to. So it looks like they're going to liquidate and wind it up. And this is one of the larger ones, and it's done reasonably well since it was launched in 2014. And it just goes to show that even one of the all-star sort of fund managers can deem that their fund is underperforming and therefore just call it a day. You know, and other people have been happy with that. There's other funds out there that are doing far worse than that particular fund since 2014 and the launch, and this year and the last 5 years. But it looks like it's going to be wound up. And I just found that really, really interesting, because the whole point of exercising your right to say, I'm not going to choose individual stocks, I'm going to let someone else manage my money, I'm going to choose a fund, is to, for your fund manager to continue doing that for 5 years, 10 years, 15 years. And essentially he's gone after 8 years, this is not making as much returns as I would like in the emerging market, so therefore I'm out of here. I just thought that was very interesting. What are your thoughts about it?
Well, in a way, I sort of admire that, in the sense that he's been sort of, I mean, you know, it could be driven by self-interest, obviously. But I remember he was sort of saying that he wanted to bring funds to the public that were of an extremely high quality, you know what I mean, were ones that really did achieve. And I think in some ways the recognition, and in way the honesty, that one of his funds isn't really up to scratch, in a way, maybe that's a good thing. I don't know.
You're right, you've got to admire it. But I think my thing was saying was that I think the market was going, you know, because that's A, one of our number one fund managers, and B, he's saying, this isn't quite working out for me. I'm just going to call it a day. Yeah. And you're right. How many fund managers would actually say, I'm going to liquidate this? You know, I would like, you know, I think, yeah, not so sure. Let's liquidate it. Would voluntarily go for that? I don't think many people would do that, Pete.
I've seen a lot of fund management companies where they merge it with another fund.
Yeah.
So it sort of gets hidden.
Sometimes they're forced or encouraged to do that. This almost seems like he was... You know,
but he is actually liquidating, is he? So people who hold
faith, looking into it, I think this is going to be confirmed at a later date. We'll probably know by about November.
See, that is quite different to merging with another fund you've got. That is interesting. Yeah, that is interesting.
Yeah.
Wow, mate. Another stock.
What you got? Yeah, go for it.
I'll tell you what, I've got one that I don't think I've ever mentioned on the podcast. I don't think you have. You might have. I don't know. I don't think we have. But it's one that was a real sort of darling of everybody for several years, and it did really well. But then it, you know, struggled, and I think the pandemic was the main reason. And that's good old BioVentix. BVXP. It had results the other day. I get the impression things are improving there, because BioVentix does like antibodies and stuff. They've got laboratory. From memory, they don't have many employees. It's a very small, labor not intensive operation. I believe they're in Farnham, but I might have made that up. They basically have like laboratories and stuff, and they create antibodies. And these antibodies are used in drug tests and things. But I think they're used in more than just drug testing and drug trials. I think they've got a wider use as well, but I'm not totally au fait with it. But during the pandemic, the demand for antibodies and that dropped off a cliff. So they really struggled for a while. But it looks to me, reading their latest updates, that they're back on track. And from memory, I'll check the numbers. I think it's got a pretty good dividend as well, which always is worth thinking about. Do you know anything about BVXP, mate?
I know historically that it was one of the favourites for the mellow Fin Twitters. I think Leon Boros was one of the guys that were.
Yeah.
I was heavily invested in it, and it was doing extremely well for, I think, up to 2020, 2021, and then it's just been rolling over for the past 12 months. But like you say, it might have bottomed of late, and I think those results, like you say, made it look like growth was returning as such. It boosted its dividend as well.
Have you got the dividend figure there, mate? I'm fighting.
I haven't got
my
the dividend figure here, mate. No.
Oh, I've got it now. Hang on. I'll be there in two.
So, I think the only thing I've read from memory regarding it was that its cash levels were quite low. So if it's generating more revenues, then the cash flow will increase. So that the cash levels may not be a problem.
It was always very good at cash.
Yeah. I think the thing for me with BioVentix has always been the fact that it was always quite richly priced. And with the share price coming down prior to this announcement, it was always a case of how low can it go? But if it's coming out with saying, actually, we are returning to growth, the low might already be in, Pete. Who knows? You know.
Well, looking on SharePad, it's got forecast PE of 26.3, dropping to 26. Now, obviously, if they beat earnings, that
would then
true PE is lower. But
the
interesting bit is the forecast dividend yield is 3.8%. So you're getting a pretty nice dividend, and it's got net cash. So anyway, it's one to think about.
For me, Pete, it's always has been the case and remain the case. If there's a stock which everybody's talking about and everybody's saying this is the bee's knees, it's going to be, going gangbusters, I'll just shut the door and go, no, thank you.
Well, no one's mentioned it for ages, have they?
No one's mentioned it for ages because the share price is going down. That's standard, Pete. It goes quiet. When it's going up, everyone's talking about it. When it's going down, no one's talking about it. You know, and the stocks today that have been hammered, no one will be talking about it, next couple of weeks. And then when it starts to go up again, they'll be talking about it.
Have you got any other stocks you want to mention?
I think the only other stock I want to mention as an indicator, again, we're talking about where the markets could go and people need to keep an eye on this. And the question I ask myself is this still a barometer for the markets? And this again was last week, I think, if I get my bearings right, I'm just thinking off the top of my head here, was essentially a profit warning from FedEx in America.
Yeah.
And obviously that's one of the largest logistic companies in the world, delivering your parcels and all the rest of it, delivering this and delivering that. And essentially they're saying that, you know, they're expecting lower revenues and the profit warned. And my question, Pete, really is that, is it still a barometer for growth? And if so, what does that mean going forward? Because one of the other ones that are competing with now, and not many people talk about this, and this is why you need to keep an eye on these larger behemoths that get involved in everything, is Amazon and Amazon Logistics. You know, they're delivering, I'm not saying, I haven't got the number, so I'm not going to pull a figure out of the air, but they're delivering a large volume of stuff, to use that word.
Mate, yeah? I've just looked.
Yeah, they're delivering a lot of logistics globally. And FedEx came out and said, we're being compromised regarding our growth and our revenue. And I just wondered whether or not that was an indicator to keep looking at these logistic companies to see how they are doing. And if they keep coming out with positive or negative news, that could be another indicator as to how well we're doing as an economy in the UK, the US, and globally. Because globally, we need the economies to be doing well. And we're not earmarked in the UK to be doing well going forward. And I'm not sure, you know, if one of the engines being the US, FedEx are saying we're not doing well, and they're saying we're not doing well globally, what does that mean for what's coming out of China? What does that mean for China products? What does that mean for UK products that are being sold abroad, and what we're importing? Are we importing, you know, all those sort of things to look into, I think. So that's why I'm raising that as a research thing regarding all the logistic companies going forward. Same as we've spoken the last time about the recruitment companies potentially doing okay, despite the share prices being nearer to 52-week lows in the last podcast. And we saw STEM, S3, come out today, and their numbers again, was it today or yesterday? I'm losing track. They came out with reasonable numbers as well regarding recruitment. So yeah, so it's all that regarding the markets. Go for it. I'm done with stocks now, so you can finish off. Go for it.
Apart from a fly just appearing on my screen that I've had to waft away, mate, mm-hmm. I've just looked at the markets while you were talking, and the NASDAQ and the Dow have just tanked. Fed raises rates by another 0.75 percentage point to fight inflation.
Yeah.
So that's as expected. But it says that CNBC is saying that Treasury yields are rising on 10-year bonds, US 10-year Treasuries. So bond rates going up is seen as, you know, it's higher rates, it's inflation, it's all that bad stuff.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, this is the thing with regards to what's going on with the Dow. So the Dow, what I'm seeing here is down 0.5%, S&P down 0.5%, comp down 0.7%. So it really depends.
It's improved on its initial. When I look just now, when you mentioned FedEx, I went.
Well, it might be 15 minutes out, Pete. I'm just trying to grab it here from another screen.
It's literally just reacting.
Have a look. Yeah, yeah. It's going to be volatile right now regarding the Fed raising it 0.75 points. It's been earmarked that they were going to raise it by 0.75 percent.
Yeah, that was expected.
But it doesn't mean the market is not going to be volatile. So at the moment, from what I'm looking at here, Pete, you're looking at the Dow being down 200 points, and it's going to be volatile. If it can finish around this sort of point at 30,500 on the Dow, that's not too bad.
That's what I'd say.
If it can claw it back and end up flat, the markets will be fine by the end of the week. If it tanks and completely just falls and we see it nearer to 30,000 rather than 30.5, the FTSE tomorrow and the FTSE All Share and the AIM markets on Thursday will be. And as I fear, you know, if the Dow sneezes, we will get pneumonia, you know, and that's when we're down at 7,000 on the FTSE. And in October, we might well see 7,000 on the FTSE. I'd rather we see 7,500 on the FTSE and we have the Santa rally. But there's nothing giving me faith that we're going to see positivity on the markets. You know, am I going to put all my trust in Liz to help the markets? No. You know, am I going to put all my faith in Mr. P in Russia to help us with the and the war to finish and the, reach a, some sort of agreement?
No chance. You know? No chance.
What am I looking for to help me be positive on the market?
Yeah. As, you know, as so, we discussed earlier.
As we discussed. So I'm still trimming my takeover stocks. I'm still trimming stocks that I think have gotten ahead of themselves. I'm increasing my cash levels. I will be selling more and more stocks going forward. And the ones that I'm thinking, you know what, sod it, this is now a really good price, I'll be buying a 1% position and looking again in 3 months' time or 6 months' time as to what to do with it. And if it means that I'm going to add more, I'll add more until I get a 2.5%, 3% position. Because some of the stocks that I've had my eye on for absolutely ages are sitting near 52-week lows. It does not mean they can't go to 2-year lows,
yeah. or
3-year lows.
Yeah.
They absolutely can. And I'm saying that the FTSE could hit 7,000. The stocks that I'm buying now could go much, much, much lower. You know, but in 3 years, 5 years' time, I'm not going to care. Because in theory, if they're good enough, in 5 years' time, when all this trouble's over with, hopefully over with, yeah. and the markets are doing better and the economy is doing better, what I'm buying today will be 50%, if not 100% higher, if I've chosen correctly. You know?
That makes sense. Crossed. Can I just add on the Fed, something that we always need to look at or be aware of is the meeting and discussion that comes after the Fed decision.
Oh, yeah.
Because
once he starts talking, mate.
Yeah. Because
oh my gosh.
I think the process is that the Fed, I think they tend to do like a 1 or 2 day meeting where the actual Federal Open Markets Committee, that the economists all get together and the bankers and they discuss it. They then do the announcement, which is where the share price, you know, the index have just reacted. You then get the meeting afterwards where they talk to the press and whatever. And quite often, the markets can be happy with what the Fed announced in terms of the rate decision. But once they hear the narrative, they're like, oh, narrative. I don't like that.
And absolutely and positive. You struck gold there, Pete. You're absolutely spot on. And this goes back to this other aspect that I've been keeping an eye on regarding the fear factor in the market. You've got essentially traders, right? Not investors, traders out there right now, right? That the people that scalp 3%, 5%, 10% over a couple of days or a couple of weeks or even a couple of months, they're scalping all the time. They're looking for little trade ideas, bomb, bomb, in and out of the market. They're not investors. There's so many of those that are saying they've cashed up. They can't find trades. There are no trading ideas. This market's horrible. I'm not making any money. The volatility and the movement of the share prices going up 5%, 10%, up and down, that's to me, when I was trading back in the day, was making absolute hay on these markets when they were volatile like this. I don't understand right now why some of these traders can't make any money. Are traders only able now to make money when the markets are going up?
Well, I guess they should be going short, shouldn't they? That's part of the, yeah.
I'm not saying you have to. I never used to short the markets, Pete. I've never leveraged my sort of things. But this is what I'm saying. But they're out. They're cashed up. They've got 50% cash, not exposing any money to the market because they're so fearful of the markets and where they could go. So that, to me, tells you how bad things are when traders are not trading.
Yeah.
Traders are not trading. What about us investors that are looking to make money regardless of what's going on with the markets? There's no hope for us, is there?
Yeah.
So anyway, but that's it. Keep an eye on the people that are traders on the timeline and seeing what they're doing, because a lot of them are getting hurt regarding the markets, obviously, because they're not they're not happy to expose themselves to the market in the sense of trading. So if you're out there investing in the market, then be careful, because I think that's the way to be, preserve your capital.
A weird thing just happened on my screen. You sort of froze, right?
I'm fine, mate. Moving around.
But I remember that happening on the last. I remember that happening on the last podcast we recorded.
Yeah, it's fine.
Do you know what it is? My boiler just fired up, and I swear, the second the boiler fired up, it did that freezing. So there you go, mate.
That's you, mate. That's your computer glitching up on us. Right. Okay, folks. That's it. I'm not sure how long we've done, because Pete and I tend to yap longer than I always fear. That we do. So I just want to say to you lovely ladies and gentlemen, once again, thank you ever so much for supporting us. thank you ever so much for your feedback, which I'm going to write up and put into the next article and write up that we do on my website. I want to thank you all for your continued support. As always, the feedback's been brilliant. The other thing I want to say as well is that I've been getting some DMs regarding help. I try my level best to support as many people as I possibly can. I'm not going to share trading ideas or investing ideas, but if you are having difficulty regarding the markets, Pete's DMs always open. Mine are always open. And if we can help, we will help. I think the other aspect of things I want to say is what I always say at this point in juncture. There are a lot of people, we're heading towards the dark months now, right? I'm looking outside my window now. It's now 7:30. It is dark, right? There are a lot of people that live on their own. One of the biggest problems we've got in the UK right now and around the world is mental health and loneliness, right? Please take a moment to look out and reach out to people that you know that live on their own, whether they're relatives or family, yeah, or friends. Just give them a call, check on them, go and see them, yeah, meet them up at the weekend and get them out from their isolation and see what you can do to support them. We're going through a lot of difficulties right now across the globe, and a lot of people are trying to do the very best for other people. And if you can support a charity, you know, there, if you go into a local supermarket, there'll be a trolley there. And most good supermarkets have a trolley there. You bought four tins of beans, just crack one of those packs of four and put one of those tins of beans in one of those additional trolleys they've got near the aisles and support one of the food parcel or the food banks that are out there, and just donate, you know, something, an item. You know, you've bought two boxes of cereal, just drop a box of cereal in one of the trolleys. And just, the food banks are going to struggle this year because other people are struggling who would donate, no longer can donate because they're thinking about their energy bills. So if you can afford to, when you go shopping next time, just drop a tin of beans or something, whatever it is, you know, in that particular food bank trolley. Okay, folks. And of course, trying to support Pete and I with the charity for Bank Backup Trust as well. And retweet and let us know what you thought of this podcast. You know, if it's too long, let us know. If it's too much ramble, let us know. You know, thank you ever so much. Take care. God bless. Next time we see you, it will be October. When the weekend comes, enjoy yourselves and look out for everybody and be kind. Be kind. God bless. See you later. Bye-bye.
Cheers.
This Twin Peaks Investing Podcast is brought to you in association with ShareePad from ShareScoop, the UK's number one investment data and analysis software for private investors and traders. Visit ShareScoop.co.uk and discover the advantage.